Good.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. Welcome to another edition of Heavy Meta. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Bryce Kundick, and I'm joined with
Kelly Boyman.
And today we are interviewing another on-campus author, who is
Luann Yetter.
And welcome. Thank you very much for joining us, Luann.
Thank you, Luann. I love the name of your program.
I think that was Kelly. I want to say Kelly came up with
very
that
clever.
One.
Thanks.
She's good with the naming. Tell us a bit, introduce yourself. Who are you?
My name's Luann Yetter. I teach here at UMF. I teach journalism and first-year writing.
Okay. And how long have you been at UMF?
Oh, my gosh, about 1 million years.
1 million years? Wow.
Since before dirt.
Yeah.
Preozoic time period.
Right, right.
Pretty
much forever.
Okay, very cool. Tell us about the book that you've brought to talk about today.
Well, it's called Bar Harbor in the Roaring Twenties. It came out about a year and a half ago, after a few years of research, and it is a series of stories, non-fiction stories, set in Bar Harbor and Mount Desert Island, all of them in the 1920s.
Hmm. That sounds really cool.
Do you have a favorite of the stories that you collected?
Probably my favorite ones are about some of the people who came and were bootleggers, and because it was such an interesting time, there was this sort of kingpin guy I discovered through a lot of research who was kind of the major bootlegger on the island, and he eventually got into trouble, which is how I found out most of the information I did about him, because he actually finally had, there was a trial and he served a year in federal prison. But yeah, the bootlegger stuff was probably the most fun part to write about in the book.
So were you like, did you go out to Bar Harbor? Where did you do the research? How did you research?
I spent a lot of time in Bar Harbor, which wasn't
that's
terrible.
Right.
Yeah. That was fun. And so going to all the historical societies and digging through their archives, spent a lot of time doing that, talking with old-timers when I could. Mm. But also, all of the Bar Harbor Times are online. And
really?
Available through the Mount Desert Island.
They're all digitized?
Historical Society.
Wow.
Yes. Which
That's
made my job
undertaking.
Much easier.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
It's a great resource.
Right.
And the articles hadn't been online very long when I started to research, so I was uncovering a lot of things that hadn't been uncovered for years and years, things that people had forgotten about. Like this bootlegger that I mentioned. He never had any children, and so his line kind of, you know, didn't continue, and he wasn't really remembered around town. There were a couple other bootleggers who had kids, and their descendants are still in the area, and one of them who built a theater later, the Criterion there in Bar Harbor, he's remembered as the bootlegger, but he worked for the guy I
dug
up.
No respect.
Yeah, that's right.
The forgotten scallywag.
Kind of forgotten.
You found him.
Yeah,
that is cool.
It was kind of neat.
So when they digitized these papers, did they just scan them? I mean, how are they digitized? I mean, did they use optical character recognition?
Yes.
So you could just, okay.
They did. And so there were, sometimes I'd run into things that were hard to read.
Right.
Because the original wasn't.
There was no pictures of it. It was just the text, or how did they do it? Do you remember?
I should. My gosh, I've spent hours and hours looking at that stuff, and now I'm trying to. Yeah, I'm thinking. No, it was just the. It was
just
the picture.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good.
All the pictures.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. Right. And then you had to zoom in and get it bigger. That was it.
Cool. I was just reading an article yesterday, day before, in the Bangor Daily News about Prohibition. I mean, not like that has something to do with your book. There was a famous madam in Bangor at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were talking a bit about, I hadn't realized that the Prohibition laws actually sort of originated from Maine. Which was interesting.
Isn't
Do you know much about that?
Yeah. There's been prohibition in Maine since 1850.
1850?
Yeah, so way ahead of any other state in the country. And there's a lot of theories that it was mainly because there was so much heavy drinking in Maine up until that point, reason being the rum trade. The Mainers would send the wood or barrel staves to the East Indies,
mm-hmm.
and in return, the ships would bring back either sugar cane from which to make molasses and rum, or the actual already distilled rum. So there was all kinds of rum and all kinds of products to make rum coming into Maine. There were some distilleries that developed here in Maine, in Portland, that got patents and were ahead of their time on how to distill rum. And so Maine was a huge rum-drinking state, which led to a lot of problems, which led to a real backlash, which led to the prohibition in 1850.
So did that mean there were pretty much bootleggers here since 1850? Did they have,
They
had a whole lot
of
experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the case with my guy, Herlihy, and his family. They were already geared up for this. When National Prohibition hit, they were pretty happy because
they already had the operation in place.
I know where this ends.
We've got our whole network.
Bootlegging since 1850.
They were already bringing.
The still is already up and running.
Yeah, and they were already bringing liquor up from the West Indies and from all over the Caribbean. And of course, Bar Harbor is a port, so that was easy enough. And there's all kinds of little coves and hiding places along the coast,
and crannies along there
in particular, where they could unload.
Sure,
smuggler's paradise. So, right, exactly. Even more than Bangor, because Bangor would have been too obvious. But they were hard to catch when they came into Bar Harbor and that area.
Now I know that you've also written a history of the Franklin County area.
Yeah.
Were there bootleggers here too?
Not that I ran into.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were, and I would love to go back and really focus on the 1920s in Farmington now.
Yeah.
Since I have done this research elsewhere. Most of the research I did in Farmington was earlier than that. And I never, the whole prohibition and that era was something that I got a little bit more into after I finished the Farmington book. That was the first one I did.
We have a collection of scrapbooks in the UMF archives that were kept by female students in the 20s, and they are a riot. I love them.
Yeah.
Wow. Those girls were a blast. I want to hang around with those girls.
I think you used some of that info on the posters you made.
We did,
right?
Yes.
I love those posters. I love that series.
That scrapbook collection is an absolute hoot.
Oh, it must be.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see it sometime.
Yeah.
What time period did you research in Farmington?
The result of a newspaper column that I wrote for about 10 years.
Hmm.
And I kind of picked and chose from all kinds of different eras in Farmington, from the earliest white settlers through. I did write about baseball in the 1920s in Farmington.
Mm.
There was a semi-pro team here.
Oh, wow.
And
at
that's
Hippic
cool.
Or where? Like,
yeah, they played at Hippic.
Okay, well, so that's maybe one of the reasons why Hippic is so nice that we had.
Yeah, well, and well, that was from the school that was right there, Little Blue,
What school?
Actually. UMF.
Farmington Normal
Where the pond is,
Roller Pond.
Next to the normal school was a boys boarding school.
Called Little Blue.
It's run by the Abbott family.
And there's a Farmington Academy? No. There's another name for it, can't think.
It was Farmington Academy.
Was it?
I think so. Yeah.
All right. They had boys coming from not just all over the country, but also South America.
Really?
But there was then a tragic car accident where one of the students was killed. And he was from the Hippick family in Chicago. And as a result, they donated the money to build the field in his name.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a book written about
that?
That was, or that was just
not,
the newspaper article?
Actually, I never wrote about that. But Paul Mills, do you know him?
Okay,
he's
yeah.
another historian in the area. He's done a lot of research on that.
So I have to ask a random Farmington history question, because
mm-hmm.
my house is old. It's from 1841.
Mm-hmm.
And I know who built it, and maybe you don't know anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
Elkanah Oaks? Is that anything?
Oh, boy. No.
I thought it was worth a shot.
Throw it out there.
Throw it out
happens.
There. You never know.
The name sounds familiar.
He was a wheelwright of some...
where is your house?
It's over on Knowlton Corner Road, just over by when you branch off to... Our,
okay.
Why am I saying... Why am I giving my address on the
yeah.
radio? I mean, it's in Wilton. Yeah, so...
I think I've ran across the name before, but
okay,
nothing
but
really
not,
jumps out at me.
Okay, he wasn't like an infamous bootlegger
that,
you know,
yeah.
killed
No,
like
I wish I had a good story for you. But there were some counterfeiters in the area.
Counterfeiters?
Ooh,
yeah, I did
exciting.
Dig up a story about them from the 1870, around there, I think. They lived in Chesterville. And
old Chettyville.
Yeah, it's always been a strange place.
It is a strange place. No offense, Chesterville. Love you.
And they were quite successful for several years. They got away with it, with their counterfeiting. But they eventually did get caught. But years later, in the house where they lived, somebody tore off the roof, and under the roofing, one layer of roofing, was a bunch of counterfeit dollar bills.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder if
wow.
counterfeit, if his, like historical counterfeit money is worth anything. You know, like
oh,
if,
good
if,
question.
If, well, yeah,
it.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
like,
I bet it is.
I would
I
think.
Imagine.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is right now I'm going to start counterfeiting
sure.
money. I'm not going to use
yeah.
it. Now.
Just
I'm just going to hide
away.
It.
Yeah.
For your grandchildren.
Exactly. Great grandchildren.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
they'll be like, oh, look. And then they can sell it and, you know, we'll be good.
There you go.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you've done a lot of research on a lot of different topics. Is it something? Is research something you just naturally do? I mean, what draws
yeah.
you? Yeah.
Yes. I love it. Especially old newspapers. I just can't get enough of reading through old newspapers and then crafting stories from what I find. It's just... As a writer, it seems like it's something that comes naturally to me. I in all of the books that I've written, I never write any fiction. I always stick to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I speculate sometimes
right.
about, well, he might have felt this way or that way or whatever. But I love that challenge of digging up as many facts as I can find and then using just that to tell a story. Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of addictive.
I
hadn't gotten into it much recently. So my wife is from Slovakia, and we've been
mm-hmm.
doing some family history. She didn't know anything about her family history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always sort of assumed that to do any family history research, we'd have to go over to Slovakia, which
yeah.
is a bit expensive.
Right.
But I found out that they digitized all their records.
Great.
And so I've been going through, and it's just fascinating.
Isn't
what you
is?
End up finding out. And
yeah.
you know, you find out, well, this guy was married, and then like just this last weekend we discovered her ancestor was married to this woman, she died, and then he married her younger sister, which
mm-hmm.
I thought was, you know, kind of
it
mm-hmm.
was the thing though.
I
they
guess
that.
You know,
mm-hmm.
whatever works. But it's yeah, I mean
yeah.
so I could
Yeah, and you find those little facts.
Oh, yeah.
And pretty soon a story just kind of
right.
unfolds from
and
that.
And it's so fun when you unearth one of those little nuggets, you know?
It
it's
is.
like a dog on a piece of cheese that
I
you
know.
Dropped, you know?
Yes.
It's just, oh my God, that's
wow.
my person.
Yeah.
You know? That,
yeah.
The great
right.
whatever grandparent that I was looking for.
And sometimes it solves a mystery or it confirms something you
yeah.
suspected. And
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah.
yeah.
It
yeah, so I'll bet like finding out about that bootlegger was really thrilling.
Really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So when you decided to write this book, was it, I mean, it's published now. Who did?
Mm-hmm.
How did it get published?
The History Press.
History Press. Is that,
mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about it.
They're based in South Carolina, and they're now affiliated with Arcadia,
okay.
which is another historical press, and they do books of local history all over the East Coast.
Did Did you take this to them as a proposal, or did you have it completed and you sent it to them and said, I'd like to get this published? How did
this
it work?
This is the third book I've done for them, and with the first one about Farmington, they actually came to me. I know, that never happens.
That's
right?
Awesome.
I know you're a writer too.
Right, right.
Probably. So that's probably hard to believe. But yeah, I got this email from an editor there, and he had become familiar with my history columns.
Okay.
And was wondering if I was interested in putting that together as a book, and would I send him some of the columns, and he, you know, talked to the board, so on. And I thought it was a vanity press, and
right.
I thought it was just a scam.
Yeah.
You know,
send
sooner or later,
we'll
exactly,
right.
sooner
yeah.
or later, they were going to say, and if you just send us $1,000 or whatever. But I kept playing along, just kind of waiting for the scam to be revealed.
You're a trusting soul.
I wrote my first book on a scam. I finished the book.
And
I had it done.
Well,
but
I wasn't going to write a check. You know, I
right.
was going to stop before I got to that point. But eventually they sent me a contract, and I showed it to my husband, who was a lawyer, and he said, yeah, no, it's a real contract. It's, you know,
yeah.
this is the real thing. And I, oh, okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm going to get a book published.
So you've written three. So the
so
one
I've
on Farmington.
Three,
one
on Farmington, and then one on Portland.
Okay.
And the one on Portland is like Farmington. It there's stories from all different eras, ending in the late 1880s in Portland. And then with the third book that I pitched about Bar Harbor to the History Press, they said, well, you know, we think it'll sell better if you focus a little tighter. And so I was trying to figure out whether I wanted to do the late 1800s or the roaring 20s, but the roaring 20s seems an awful lot like the 1960s, which
mm-hmm.
is another decade that I'm particularly
right.
interested in, and I use as a theme in my English 100 classes. So I went with the roaring 20s, and it was a lot of fun because I think that most people who are interested in Bar Harbor history feel like the late 1800s was the apex, the high point of
Gilded Age.
The Gilded Age, the huge mansions, the
mm-hmm.
really wealthy families. But after World War I, a lot of those families came back. Some new mansions were actually built with new money.
Mm-hmm.
And Bar Harbor really thrived again in the 1920s until it suddenly didn't
right.
because of the Depression.
Yeah.
So I feel like I unearthed a lot of information about an era that had kind of been forgotten, or at least sort of in the background compared to the late 1800s.
Well, I'm leafing through, and it's called, again, it's called Bar Harbor in the Roaring Twenties, From Village Life to the High Life on Mount Desert Island. And you've got some great images in here.
Mm,
where do you get your images from?
That was a struggle, but the library in Bar Harbor has a wonderful postcard collection.
Oh, cool.
Some of them from there. The Mount Desert Historical Society has a great collection of photographs. So that was another source. The Northeast Harbor Library has a wonderful collection. So those were places where I spent a lot of time digging through and
mm-hmm.
finding images. That's a challenge because with the format of the book, the publisher wants a lot of images, and they're very picky about
mm-hmm.
how they look.
Yeah.
So I unearthed a lot of images I thought were great, but because they didn't reproduce well,
mm-hmm.
they said no, and I had to go back and find more.
Yeah.
So that was a real challenge, but of course I learned a lot as I discovered the photos, too.
You came up with some really nice ones.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So where is it available? Is it on
yeah,
Amazon? Or
it is. It's on Amazon. It's downtown. And the UMF store, I know, has had my books. I think they probably still do. I think you have copies of each of them at the library.
I hope so.
We have this one, but by golly, we will.
Okay, good.
Yes, we will.
Good.
Are you working on anything right now?
I'm working on some fiction that is just kind of for fun. And just kind of taking a break from the history, and I'm thinking I would like to move backwards now in Bar Harbor history and do the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've done the 1920s, I'd also like to move forward in Portland and do the 1920s since I did earlier in Portland.
Yeah.
So I've got some ideas for new books for the History Press, but I'm taking a little break and just experimenting with some fiction for right now.
I'm all for fiction
as
well.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know you are.
We've talked to other fiction authors, Bryce, and talked a little bit about their process. So what's your actual writing process like? Are you a very disciplined writer? Or?
I'm a very disciplined researcher. And once I have my research together, I'm pretty painstaking in how I write the story because I'm so afraid of getting something wrong, you know, that I'm always going back to my research. And one of my weaknesses is that I never think I have enough research, so I'm always going back and doing more instead of writing. You know, at the point where I should be writing, I'm telling myself, oh, no, maybe I can find this. To make the switch then to fiction has been difficult for me. And I find sometimes I can't get going until I start doing some research. You know, like
research junkie.
I'll have a setting. Like I ended up, my characters, I thought it might be neat if they went to Mexico, and then I ended up researching these villages in Mexico in the 1960s. And, you know, I didn't really need to, but it was
It happens. Like I'm writing a book. I was writing a book that takes place in Chicago around 1894, and so typically I've written fantasy, and it's like I'll just make it up. But this was, I mean, Chicago existed. There were people who lived in Chicago, and so it's like, well, I mean, I had my character. She wanted to go to the police, and I was like, well, where would she go? And you know,
there you go.
How far is it? And you know, because, and the crazy thing is that I know almost nobody is going to care, but there are people who are going to care.
But somehow,
and they'd be like,
there
"You got that
joke
wrong,
yeah."
You know,
you don't want to get something obviously wrong. And you know, we probably all had that experience where we're reading a novel about some place we're familiar with, and they get something wrong. Then you don't forgive the author for that.
That's one of the reasons my last book, Memory Thief, I set in Livingston, Maine, not Farmington, Maine. Even though it is Farmington, but that way, like, if anyone's like, "Well, you got," I was like, "Well, yeah, it's a bit different.
It's fictional, you know?
Livingston is not Farmington.
It's different." So, but it's not like you, Chicago. It wasn't Chicago. It was Chicago. Punxsutawney.
Other
really big city in Illinois that is just next to it.
Yeah.
That also had a World's Fair. Yeah, it was crazy.
Don't judge.
What is your, so outside of historical fiction, what is your favorite genre?
What is my favorite? I love Jane Austen and that era. I love anything British. I'm a sucker for a good British novel, no matter what era it's written in. But when it's somebody like Jane Austen who throws in some romance as well, it makes it even better.
Do you have a favorite among Jane's work?
Oh gosh, it's hard to not love Pride and Prejudice the best, I think, even though it's sort of a predictable answer.
This is where I have to admit, I was an English major, I have an English master's, and I have never read any Jane Austen.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Oh, wow. You owe it to yourself.
It's almost like a badge of honor or dishonor at this point that I haven't, and so it's like I just refuse.
Yeah.
But I know I ought to.
Yeah.
I'm depriving only myself. Silly me.
Elizabeth Bennet is a character worthy of getting to know.
Yeah, she really is. Yeah. Someday.
Someday.
Not that I don't like other Austen, but Elizabeth is my favorite. I'm not going to apologize for it.
So Kelly has one of, I think, it's my favorite question that we ask each week or each time we interview, and it's a bit, it's stumped most people. I've actually, 3 out of 3 so far, we've had to be like, but it gets great results at the end, so I'm gonna let her.
Okay. If you need a moment to think, we will cut to a break.
Right.
And so the question is, if you could rewrite the fate of any fictional character, who would it be and what would happen to them?
Oh, jeez. Oh, okay, yeah, you're right, I need to think.
Oh, for four. Andrew just said, yes, our sound engineer just said,
it's a good
we got another one.
But it's hard to answer.
It is.
We've had...
You have to have a minute.
I rewrote
okay.
Roy Hobbs.
Yeah, you did.
In The Natural.
Yeah.
Pete Hart, let's see, was Pete Hardy, he did
Pete
Dobby,
Pete Hardy
right?
did Dobby, the house elf
yeah.
from Harry Potter.
Oh. So that Dobby didn't
yeah.
die.
Oh.
Michael Johnson, he went obscure on us.
He did.
Yeah. There was this African-American author who'd like written depressing endings to his autobiography, and then he changed
mm-hmm.
the ending to his autobiography to make it happier, and he wanted to change it back. Sorry, Michael, I'm a little bit fuzzy on the answer, but
lost,
it was interesting.
You lost Bryce on that one.
Although maybe we're just editing this part out as you're
yeah.
thinking. Oh my gosh, I'm just drawing a blank. Heart of Darkness, Everybody Loves Zeppelin Ever After.
All right, that's it. That's my story. Next to you're putting a happy ending on Heart of Darkness, and now it's like Heart of Light.
Heart of Light. Heart of Sweetness and Light. And then all is happy ever after.
Yeah, that's and don't even ask me to elaborate.
Okay, no, say no more. Say no more.
Heart of Darkness, the musical.
It's like a Mel Brooks adaptation now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Singing and dancing
right.
in the jungle.
Oh
boy. No, it's a good one. It inevitably results in some interesting answers. Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hope it wasn't too painful of an interview process.
No, you know, this was actually fun. Yeah, I've listened to lots of radio interviews. It's kind of fun to actually do one.
Well, we're glad you did. Thanks
yeah.
for coming.
Yeah, you guys are good.
Okay, well, you've been listening to WUMF Heavy Meta, and we'll see you next week.
Bye now.